Can we talk about how incredible our skin is? It's our protector, while also being a litmus test for how our body is doing, physically and emotionally. Join host Nicole Berry as she unravels the mysteries around our skin on the new series, Skin Queries, a podcast brought to you by Ruby Studio from iHeartMedia. Nutrition, sun exposure, stress, she gets to the heart of how to make everybody glow from the inside out. Listen to Skin Queries on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant. AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
The executive producer is Papa that week. And you want to say, how am I doing? Am I doing this correctly? Am I doing what you want? Are you happy? Are you happy that you hired me?
Right.
That's really important to me. Right. And you would figure, why would that be important to you? Look at your career. Look at all you've done. No. I still need affirmation from Daddy. Tell me I'm good. Tell me I'm good. And I don't want the audience to tell me I'm good. I want you, the writer,
yeah,
the creator, to tell me, this is what I wrote. I wrote a double. I think you hit a triple. You may have even hit a home run.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Every time I work, that's what I want. So that's what I do. Hi, my name is Richard Kind, and I get to talk all about me for the next hour.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of Off the Beat. As always, it's me. It's Brian Baumgartner. As you just heard, if you don't recognize that voice, I don't know where you've been for the last 50 years. The incredible Richard Kind is the man you just heard from. Look, I got to tell you, I am more than kind of excited to share our conversation today. Get it? No, that was bad. But it's true. It's incredible. He has been in more movies and TV shows than I can count. But luckily, I don't have to. IMDb says that he has worked on or is working on 272 projects. Now, that's not individual episodes. 272 unique projects. That is insane. You may know him as Cousin Andy on Curb Your Enthusiasm, or perhaps Paul Lasseter in Spin City, or maybe you're most familiar with him from the numerous Pixar movies he's been involved in, Toy Story 3, or his work as Bing Bong on Inside Out, or Molt on A Bug's Life, or maybe you're more into shows about pubescent teens. Well, if so, Richard plays Marty in Big Mouth. Yes, the man has range. I'm excited to dive into some of his projects. Yes. But also, I was so interested in talking to Richard about what it's like being a working actor for all of these years. I can't tell you what this conversation meant to me. I learned so much today. I hope you have fun and maybe learn a little bit too. So it is my absolute pleasure to bring on Richard so you can hear straight from the horse's mouth, because yeah, Richard's played a horse too. No, he hasn't. That was a joke. Here he is, Richard Kind.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Hey, Hey, buddy.
I can't see you yet.
Oh, you can't see me?
Now I can see you.
Oh.
How are you? How are you? I think this is much better.
This is much better. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. You know I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. I am a huge fan of yours, which is why I'm doing this, even though it took forever to get us organized. Who have you had on the show, and what makes you a good podcaster?
Wow, that's a great question. Starting off with the questions from you. I don't know if I'm great or not, but look, here's what I find interesting is who I want to talk to are people that, one, I maybe don't know too well, mm-hmm. guys like you that I admire, but we've met, and guys that I've worked with that we don't, you know, you're on set, you don't sit there and talk so much about history or moments that help them. So who have I had? John Hamm.
Oh, okay.
Eric Stone Street.
Uh-huh.
Who did we just have? Eric McCormack and Bellamy Young and Kevin Pollak, I know, uh-huh. old buddy of yours.
One of those people you mentioned are friends of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's wonderful.
It's been a variety of conversations.
Oh, that's great. Great, great, great. You're lucky. Yeah.
I want to go back with you for a little bit. You grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm.
Right.
What is the best way to describe Bucks County for people who have never been there?
Oh, okay. It's first of all, it's beautiful. That's bottom line. Bucks County is across the river from New Jersey, from Trenton, yes. New Jersey. My dad's store was in Princeton, New Jersey.
Okay.
I was born and up until fourth grade lived in Trenton. Then we moved across the street to the Tonier area, and Trenton was beginning to change. So we moved to Bucks County, to Yardley. At the time, you had a steel mill in Fairless Hills. You had rolling farmland all over. It abuts Amish country, and it's about 50 minutes from Philadelphia. It is bucolic and beautiful, and it is surrounded by two large cities, New York and Philadelphia. I'm about an hour. By train, you're about an hour and 10 minutes from New York, hour and 20 minutes. And that's where people went to work, or they went to work in Philly, or they worked in the area.
Right. Your dad was a jeweler, I understand.
Here's a better way to describe it. My dad had a jewelry store.
Okay.
And his competition was Tiffany and Cartier.
Okay.
Because people in Princeton were very educated, very wealthy, and they either went to New York to buy all their gems and their jewelry and the watches and everything, or they went to my dad. Believe it or not, my dad's suppliers were the same people who supplied Tiffany and Cartier, the same jewelry makers.
Right.
However, Tiffany and Cartier can get necklaces that are $500,000 and have about eight of them in the window. My dad couldn't.
Right.
But if you needed one of those necklaces, he would get six of them in. He would show them to you. And then the one that you wanted, you bought. And if you didn't like any of them, he'd get six more in.
Right.
But you didn't have to schlep into the city where you were a nobody. Or you could go to my dad, who would take care of you very specifically. He knew you well. He knew your family. He knew the taste of the wife and the kids. And so it was a very personalized, beautiful jewelry store.
And I understand this was going to be your business. You were going to take up the family business.
It was. So when I say my dad wasn't a jeweler, although he knew gemology really well, he could do everything that a jeweler could. That is not what he did. My dad could sell ice to the Eskimos. He was a great and charming salesman. He was the only Jew in a very, very waspy New Jersey town, Princeton. The rest of his life was spent with Jewish friends at the club and things like that. But his work was in Princeton. And although he may have been looked at as a Jew, I don't think he was known like that. He was revered in Princeton. He was on the board of the bank, on the board of the theater, and in the town council, everything like that. So I don't believe that there was any prejudice at all in that way. He wasn't the Jewish guy in a waspy town, but he had to know that he was. And all of his friends were either, you know, from the temple, you know, from the neighborhood where he was when he wasn't working.
Right.
Yeah.
And you thought you would take this business over. My understanding was you went to Northwestern to study law, pre-law.
Right.
And because you were going to go back and take over the business.
Right. My dad did not want me to go into the business unless I got a law degree and a business degree, because he always felt that the store could have been larger and he should have made it bigger, had a couple of stores. He didn't need to, but that's all. That's what he thought I should do and expand the business. Okay. I would not. I am not business minded. Right. However, I'm a nice guy. My dad taught me two things. Number one, you never buy jewelry for a sad occasion. You always, it's always happy. It's a very positive business. And the second thing is if you believe in a product, I can sell anything if I believe in a product. And my dad's stuff was not just the best. It was so overpriced. He charged so much, but he would guarantee that what you were getting was the best quality, and he would stand behind it, and it was worth the money that you were paying. You're right. Getting the best that money could buy, and that's what he would bring in. And he would never dicker or haggle for a price or anything like that. You know, they charge $1,000, say, well, I'll give you $750. He wouldn't do that.
Okay.
He would say, no, that's not what we do. So he really taught me how to be classy. I'm not saying he was a classy guy, but when it came to that, he was classy.
Hmm.
Truly was.
Right. Yeah. Did you do any performing as a kid?
Only in school.
Okay.
The only reason I wanted to be an actor was my grandparents used to take me to theater in New York.
Okay.
And so I wanted to be an actor. But, you know, kids want to be baseball players and kids want to be firemen. And the thought of me being an actor, it was a pipe dream. It was stupid. The thing is, I kept doing school plays.
Okay.
And I was always the best. So I guess if you're the best football player, are you really going to try and be a pro? Yeah, you may have aspirations, but no. If you're a high school football player, in one hand, you can count the number of people, you know, who go on to professional sports. An actor, I guess you don't have to have such restrictions.
Right.
So I go, I'm going to be an actor. I kept being the best. I did a thing called forensics. So I won the national championship in oral interp and dramatic interp. And I said, yeah, but I'm not going to be an actor. And I went to Northwestern, where I did what I loved to do, but I got an education.
Okay.
And that's what Northwestern did. Are these answers way too long?
No, it's great. No, are you kidding me? It's great.
You'll cut when I go on too much about myself.
No, it is about you. But I'm fascinated with the moment that, you know, it sounds like you loved your dad, I presume. You respected the hell out of your dad and the business he was building. And you go to Northwestern and you're on this path. What is the moment that you decide the path is going to change? I mean, I know you end up going to Second City.
Right. It was all one thing. There was a guy who I'm actually going to see next week, I hope. He's in his 90s. They lived next door to us. He was my parents' best friend. And we're watching football, and I was supposed to go to law school, and my dad's best friend, Steve Holzman, said, these were his exact words, try acting. Because when you're 40, you're going to resent your wife, you're going to resent your kids, that you never tried it. A dream deferred. It's the worst. Go try it. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, you got the store. I was a 21-year-old kid, 20 at the time. So what the hell? And I say this if I ever give lectures or something. First of all, I had nobody to answer to but myself. Second thing is, dare to fail. And I think that's a really important thing as you really go through life. Failure can be looked on as a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That didn't happen. So what else can I do that might make me successful? And who the hell knows? I might be successful. So I went out and I tried it. And for a while, did I fail? I'll tell you the worst. And you being a character actor, I don't know whether or not you had to deal with this in your youth, but we're not the best looking men that walk the planet. I couldn't get an acting job. And what was worse is I couldn't get a waiter's job. They wanted a better looking person. And I'm going, oh my God, it's enough. I can't get work as an actor. I can't get work serving food. Well, of course, eventually I did. And of course, eventually I did. And when I say get work as an actor, I did stuff. I did the classes and I did off-Broadway plays. But the journey, this I'm sure you know too, the journey is a great time.
Yes.
After you've done the journey.
Right.
You know, sometimes that journey is just dreadful. But, you know, you go and you do an off-Broadway play, it's horrible, but you go out afterwards and you get drunk and maybe you meet a girl who you get laid and and you're doing that stuff and you can stay out till 4 a.m. because you got nobody to answer to. And you realize, I remember doing that play and I don't know whether I was good, bad, or indifferent, but I did it.
Right.
And that's fun.
Right.
I think that's a lot of fun.
So you were focused in New York. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go to Harvard or the Harvard of theater?
Of theater. Okay. When I look back at it, and I'm not looking at it, I think this is the first time I've ever said this out loud. I did everything, and it's not by plan, in increments of 4. I went to high school, 9th grade through 12th grade, for 4 years. I went to Northwestern for 4 years. I was in New York for 4 years. I went to Chicago for 4 years. Then I went to LA for a long while. As it happened, I then went back to New York for Spin City for 4 years, which is just weird. None of this was in my head.
Right.
So I'm in New York waiting tables, taking classes, doing off-Broadway stuff. I did a children's theater that was also for adults.
Okay.
I wouldn't pay money for it, but it was like if they had a theater subscription series. 1 week would be Doc Severinsen's band. They might have Tony Bennett come when it. Well, one Saturday, they'd have Daniel Boone. Right. That was a show, but it was very, very good. A very, very reputable theater company called Performing Arts Repertory Theater, but we did it primarily for kids in second grade through high school.
Okay.
That's something I did from January till May. During that time, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Brad Hall, Gary Kroger, and a guy named Rush Pearson and Paul Barras all started a group called the Practical Theater Company in Chicago.
Yep.
It's an improvisational theater company, but Chicago was the hub of improv. They were really good, really, really good. And when, I think it was Lorne Michaels, was looking for 4 additional people, they asked Bernie Solins, the owner of Second City, do you have anybody? And he, this is a horrible thing that he did, rather than show his people, who were very good, but they had just opened a show, he told them to go back to the other space and said, these guys are good. And they all got taken Saturday Night Live. So I had gone to school with those people. I had gone to Northwestern. While they were on Saturday Night Live, they said, why don't you go to Chicago and open a play at our theater? And so I went with my best friend, who we also went to Northwestern, and we opened a play that was really, really successful there.
Okay.
It was really good. The owner of Second City saw us, and he said, I want you to be, he asked me and my best friend if we wanted to be in Second City. Of course, oh my God, going to be in Second City. And so I spent 4 years in Second City.
Wow.
And that's what I did. So that's how I got to Second City. Actually, it overlapped. I did about 6 months of doing that play along with doing Second City. We would do the show first at the small little space. Then I'd run next door and do Second City, which was, so on a Saturday night, I was working from 7 at night until 2:30 in the morning, taking, or 2 in the morning, with 1 hour break from 10 to 11. Yeah, pretty great.
Prior to this time, would you say you were mainly focused in your acting on comedy? Or,
no.
Yeah.
No.
It's just, yeah.
I was an actor.
Right.
And I've always considered myself an actor.
Me too.
Yeah, it's what I do. And I do not consider myself a comedian at all.
Me neither.
And I don't consider myself a comic actor, because if I'm doing a serious play, what the hell do you want a comic actor for? I can do comedy. I can do comic parts. And I can give humanity to a serious part so that he can be that much more rounded.
That's right.
Because if you just go on and just be an ogre, I mean, Alan Rickman was the best at that. Horrible villain, always funny.
Yeah.
He always lent humor to it. So yeah. That's what I did. But I can't say that I did. And the only reason I did Second City was because they asked me.
Right.
You know, everybody asks, you know, how did you get that part? Why did you take that role? Because they asked me, do you want to do it? I said, yeah, that's all I do. Hank Azaria always says, have you ever heard the word no? You know, there's a reason I work so much is because I don't turn work down. I take it all.
Right.
I'm an idiot.
I don't know about that. Do you think that Second City helped you later on as you became more known in the comedy space? I mean, is there a correlation there?
All right. Let me tell you something that I did. A lot of times, all of these things were just mistakes because I didn't know what else to do. But this was a conscious decision. It took me forever to leave Second City. I was really scared. I had a great security in Chicago. I had friends. I'm on stage every night. I got a paycheck every week. It's not large, but it's a paycheck. I'm a working actor. And that's bottom line, is the goal for us all. Let's live well and do what we love as often as we can. This is the best life in the world. I gave my notice in February, went out there around September, October. My first thing that I got, and I got work pretty soon. I did not want to do a comedy. Okay. I didn't want, because if I've got Second City on my resume, and I was I known? No, but maybe word got out that I was Second City and I was good. I did a Stephen Cannell, awful, awful, hard-hitting police drama. It was a very gruesome show. And I will tell you, this is a side note. It was the first procedural done on TV.
Wow.
I know.
What's it called?
It's called Unsub.
Okay.
And you're going to go, what? I called it Unsub, what? Unsub. Unsub was short for unknown subject.
That's right.
And that's what the FBI division who chase serial killers would call the thing, the unknown subject.
I've been an Unsub. I did Criminal Minds. Mm-hmm. So I know.
Right.
I know unsubs and procedurals.
We were Criminal Minds in 1986.
Right.
Okay, before any of it happened. And whenever I see Peter Roth, who just left Warner Brothers, but he used to run Cannell. And whenever I see him, you know, he hugs you. And he goes, we were the first. And we were. But when I tell you, well, you know how gruesome Criminal Minds can be.
Yes.
Imagine no precedent having ever been spent. There was no precedent.
Right.
So the first episode was a great actor named Paul Guilfoyle. You know Paul?
I don't.
You look him up and you'll know exactly who he is. Paul Guilfoyle was a serial killer. He was a cobbler. And he used to put razor blades in the heels of women's shoes. So when they would try them on, they'd bend over in pain and he would stab them in the back of the neck. This was the pilot episode.
My word.
He comes running home to tell his mother, Mommy, Mommy, I did something bad. His mother, do you know who Grace Zabriskie is?
Yes.
Grace Zabriskie played his mother. He runs into the bathroom. There she is, literally spread eagle in the bathtub. So you see the origins of the horrors.
Right.
And he's talking to his mother while she's naked in the bathtub, spread eagled. In 1986, you know, Partridge Family, you know, there were, you know, whoever,
right.
Different strokes.
Right.
And this is what's on the air. And Brandon Tartikoff, who was head of the studio, Cannell was known for doing the A-Team. So he thought he was going to get the A-Team. and he saw the on the big screen this first episode, and he stands up, he goes, "What the fuck are you trying to do? Take down this whole network?" And so Cannell knew, because we were 11 on the air, he knew we were 11 and out, and we were off the air.
Wow.
I don't know how good the show was, but it was groundbreaking.
It was groundbreaking
without doing anything to the TV landscape.
Right.
It's like we changed the rules, or we made the rules, and we're never seen again.
And then nothing happened for 15 years, and now that's
it's really all the it truth.
Was. Yeah.
And then Dick Wolf took over, and Criminal Minds, and the whole thing, and that's what police dramas became.
Right. Can we talk about how incredible our skin is? It protects us from the outside world while also being a litmus test for how our body is doing physically and emotionally. Our skin sends us important messages about our lifestyle, nutrition, and about how we feel. It plays such an important role in how we see ourselves and how the world sees us. So let's shine a spotlight on our skin. Let's go deep into skin health, what it means, what it looks like, and how to have it. Join host Nicole Berry as she unravels the mysteries around our skin on the new series, Skin Queries, a podcast brought to you by Ruby Studio from iHeartMedia. With the help from people with real-life stories and experts of all sorts, she gets to the heart of what makes us glow from the inside out. Listen to Skin Queries on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
That world has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie & Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets, Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm going to take a little detour here because, let me be honest, you've done so much. We can't cover this in a day, not to speak of an hour, but you're
just pathetic, but go ahead.
You were just talking about being referring to yourself as a working actor. What we all want to do. And since you started, you have achieved that, whether it's because you couldn't say no or not. That's
right.
Good.
I know it's blind luck. It's blind luck.
So I want you for people who don't really understand, how would you describe this lifestyle of going from job to job, character to character? How would you describe that? And have you enjoyed that as opposed to the sameness?
Nobody's ever asked me that. And it's a really good question. I've addressed it, but nobody's asked me. There was a time, I'll give you the bad examples, Love Boat, Love American Style, but MacGyver, East Side, West Side, The Defenders, The Twilight Zone. You could guest star on a show and get paid well. Mm. And then all of a sudden, it became, you guessed it on a show, you got top of show. And it became something where, oh, he can't be a regular on a TV show. Now, you and I know that being a regular on a TV show pays mightily, and being a guest star does not. Right. So you can do a guest star every week of the season and make a paltry living.
Right.
But if you got to get on a TV show, if I had my druthers, I'd like to be a guest on every TV show every week of the year. That's what I would like to do. I would like to be my own repertory company. Number one, when you're a guest, they have to tell the audience who you are, why you fit in this world, why you are in this world. So you're being written. It's exploring. It's great. A guest star role is fantastic. You get to be in a lot of the episode.
Right.
You just don't get paid well. Right. Okay. You come on and you meet different people. You make new friends. It's great. You're active again. As opposed to, look, I loved every cast I've ever been with.
Sure.
But, okay, good morning. How are you? What'd you do last night? Goodbye. Okay, let's go. Okay. The energy, the excitement of meeting somebody new isn't there. It's, oh, let's just go to the old 9 to 5. Maybe you become more intimate. Maybe you become closer friends. I don't need that. I like meeting different people.
Right.
So that's what I would like to do. Look, you've heard people complain about it when they do the procedurals. I used to call it, when I was on Spin City, same joke, different words. But I get tired of it. I do. Now here's something else. This I have spoken about. When I was a kid, my favorite TV shows were Batman,
okay,
and All in the Family. In every interview that I would read with Carol O'Connor or Adam West, they would say, I don't want to just be known for being Batman. I don't just want to be known for playing Archie Bunker. Sorry, guys, you are. That's who you are.
Right.
I don't care that you did In the Heat of the Night.
Right.
I don't care that you did any of that stuff. You are Archie Bunker. You are Batman. Even at an early age, that scared the pants off me. I didn't want that at all. And at Spin City, they used to say, oh, you're going to be the breakout character. Get yourself a PR person. You're the breakout character. If I'm the breakout character, that's me. That's what I'm going to be known for. So I hardly did. Every time I did PR, I was scared that all people would know me for is it was Paul Lasseter. I did not want to be Paul Lasseter. I didn't want to be a breakout character.
Mm.
Maybe it gets you work or a movie or something for 3-4 years, but then you're just that guy. You just are. There are exceptions to the rule, of course. I think my good friend George Clooney is an exception. Became known for being Doug Ross, was lucky enough to break from that. But not many others on that show were.
Right.
It took years for Julianne to become the good wife. It's tough. I think Julianne really had to age. All I wanted to do was just keep working and working. Now, the good thing is I'm not a leading man. You know, Jeff Beck just passed away. Mm. And I read he was interviewed and they said, well, you never became the star. You never broke out like Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton. But he was voted one of the top five guitarists. And he, like I say, is thank God that never happened. I didn't have to do all of that. And I saw a clip of him playing on David Letterman. And playing great. He was fantastic. David Letterman calls him over. He sits down. You're great job, great job. And as he's saying, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Beck gets up and walks off.
Right.
And leaving Letterman hanging. And it's like, don't know me for being Jeff Beck. Know me for being guitarist Jeff Beck. And actually, Letterman being so funny, Jeff Beck is off into the wings. He leaves Dave hanging. And Dave goes, accepting the award for Jeff Beck. It was hilarious. It's like, where the hell are you going? I'm not saying, look, my ego does not want to be that because you and I both have huge egos. That's why we got in the business. But don't keep me hanging there all the time for being on this character. Yeah, keep the applause coming, but shut up. It's really a dichotomy.
Right.
I love the applause, Shut up.
Well, I absolutely love your answer about guest stars because you give a refreshing, different perspective. Because for me, in this business, the guest star role is the hardest. It's the hardest because you show up, there's 120 people standing there, and you don't know anybody's name. You don't know where the bathroom is. Yeah, you don't know.
But I love the I love the uncomfortableness of it.
You love
I love
it.
The learning and that you're just new. Especially, I have to admit this too, and you get it the same way. We walk on stage and we come with a resume.
Well, people are nice to us.
They are nice to us.
Yes.
So we are welcomed. Here you go.
Yes.
It's still uncomfortable, but they are very nice to us and they're excited to meet us. They're excited to see what we do. The only thing we could do is fuck it up.
And
we're capable of that, but we try not to. And so let's not fuck it up. And let's be excited by not knowing where the bathroom is and not knowing who these people are or how fast they work. And only one time, I've worked for Chuck Lorre a couple of times.
Yes.
But one time, and it could have had the taint of, it was in the throes of the Charlie Sheen thing on Two and a Half Men. But I don't think he liked me. I was introduced at the table, comedy legend Richard Kind, but he didn't like me as days wore on. And, and he's not the nicest man in the business, and he sort of wore it on his sleeve. Not that he was mean to me at all, but I got it that first day and it didn't continue. Now, I went on to other shows of his and he was gracious and grateful and terrific. And I knew him personally before I knew him professionally. We played poker and he was great. But you want to, the executive producer is Papa that week. And you want to say, how am I doing? Am I doing this correctly? Am I doing what you want? Are you happy? Are you happy that you hired me?
Right.
That's really important to me. Right. And you would figure, why would that be important to you? Look at your career. Look at all you've done. No. I still need affirmation from Daddy. Tell me I'm good. Tell me I'm good. And I don't want the audience to tell me I'm good. I want you, the writer,
yeah,
the creator, to tell me, this is what I wrote. I wrote a double. I think you hit a triple. You may have even hit a home run.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Every time I work, that's what I want. So that's what I do.
I love that. I love that. And how true you are. We're all looking for Daddy's approval in one way or another.
Yep.
You're a member of a prestigious club, one that at some point I hope to apply to and get in.
I wonder what you're talking about. Is this the Excessive Masturbators Club?
What are you talking about? The Character Actors Dining Society.
So you are talking about the masturbators, the Excessive Masturbators. I gotta tell you, I am. There's two things that are very difficult. One, oh God, I'm going to get so attacked here on behalf of the whole thing. God, I don't know whether I should mention. First of all, it's limited.
Yes.
We started it with a certain number of people to get other people in. A restaurant can only handle that many.
Yes.
You want to be able to talk to everybody at a meal. We've already got, the table is already too large.
It's too large.
It is truly the Character Actors Dining Society.
Yes.
And we're just a bunch of guys who like to get together, talk about our families, talk about our wives, talk about the work, talk about what influenced us, talk the best jokes that we've heard lately, talk politics, talk everything. And they're a great group of guys. And we can't make it much larger. We can't make it any larger. And I don't know who's going to die off. Okay. I don't know who's going to die off first. But we'll replace them at such a time. It's a great group of guys. And they're people who I admire, people who I am jealous of, people who, when I'm in the audition, I want dead. That's who they are. You know, I I've known 90% of them for a number of decades.
Yeah.
Quite a number of decades. I knew Bryan Cranston before he was guesting on Seinfeld. We used to play golf together.
Yeah.
And then I'd see him every once in a while. Now He is considered properly one of the great actors in the history of showbiz. And I know him now as well as I know him back then.
Because of these dinners.
So he happened to have been in New York, I think, about a month or two ago. So two of the guys who are on this thread and this dining society, great guy named Danny Burstein and Brian and myself went out for lunch. He initiated it, Brian did. We went out at 12:30, I think we met at a restaurant. I think we got out of there at 4.
Wow.
The three of us. It was
great. Awesome.
It's great. And Brian, I wish right now I could say, we'd love to have you come by.
Oh, I was joking.
I know. No. But there are people who ask, and I go, I just got luck of the draw. Right. I was just there in the beginning, you know, like number 6. And I'm lucky.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But like you say, we get to know these people, and you've got a myriad. You got me.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned all the people who were on your show. They know you, love you, and would go out. How do you call Steve Carell, although he is a character actor? But where do you go from the difference between character actor and star?
Right.
But as somebody said, you know, Brad Pitt is one of the great character actors in the business today. He really does so many different characters. But fuck him. Okay.
True. I always, whenever I think about him and that, I think of True Romance always.
You got True Romance. How about that thing where he was the Scottish boxer?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's a ridiculous performance.
Yes.
That is as good as they come. That's what I think of when they say he's a character actor. Where did he come up with that?
Right.
You know, and I had to talk about George the other day, George Clooney on Kennedy Center Honors. And I go, yeah, he plays the dashing guy. But halfway through, you realize this dashing, intelligent guy, this smooth talker, is very different from the other dashing, smooth talkers he plays. It's just, it's a variation on a theme. And then you go to, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
And where the hell did he come up with that?
Yeah.
So, and how did the Coen brothers know he was could do that? That was his first movie with the brothers. They didn't know him.
I know. That's, they're genius. I'm going to talk about them in a second, but okay. I love this quote. You described character actors as the parsley on a plate of meat and potatoes.
That is true.
Do you think everybody in the society feels that way?
Look, it's me being self-effacing. I should have corrected you immediately. I said, I am the parsley on a plate of meat and potatoes.
Okay.
And that's what I used to say about Mad About You, because I used to think Paul and Helen were magnificent in what they had to do. And I hated doing Mad About You because I was never challenged. And I once went up to Danny Jacobson, who had created the show, and I said, I'm not asking to star in the show. Give me one scene a week where the audience can say, Jesus, I love him. Wow, he's great. And you know what Danny's answer was? I can't promise you that. Mm. And that's when I hated doing Mad About You. And he was right. The show was about those two.
Right.
And I'm nothing. I'm helping tell their story. I'm going to tell you an interesting thing about Seinfeld versus Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's really interesting. Seinfeld are little blips of scene that are cobbled together to tell a story. But I don't think you ever got more than a 45-second to a minute and a half scene.
That's right. That's right.
On that show.
That's right.
It was a collection of scenes that built to an end. They had to tell the story. Everybody was really represented every single week.
Yes.
To tell their story. All four of them.
Yes.
You were truly a device to help those four people tell the story. And you never really got to shine. You got to make an impression, but you never got to shine.
Right.
And Curb Your Enthusiasm. Again, you are a device to tell one man's story, but you get to shine. And that's the difference between Seinfeld and Curb.
That's very interesting. Never really thought about it from a guest perspective, but no, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
I got an ego. Of course, yeah. I'm only thinking about me. So that's what I'm going to see. Now I was never on Seinfeld. I was hired for Seinfeld. This is an interesting story. You'll like this.
Okay.
Did you know an actor named Brad Mott?
No, the name is familiar, but I can't pull it right now.
I only ask you because he's very reminiscent of what you do. He sounds like you. He looks like you. I went to college with him.
Okay.
His most famous role, and he was not a very big actor. I think he ended up teaching for the rest of his life. He sat next to William Hurt in the movie The Accidental Tourist.
Okay.
If you remember that. And he goes, hey, you're the Accidental Tourist. I remember it also because I read the book. Anyway, that's his most famous role. Great guy. Wonderful actor. There's an audition for Seinfeld. A guy is sitting next to Jerry on the airplane. He's talking to him and something happens. Okay. I go into the audition and I'm very good at knowing what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And I'll lose a job because I'm not right for it. I don't turn down the audition, but please don't hire me. That's what I said. I sort of said here, I go, you know who you should get is Brad Mott. He'd be perfect for this role.
In the audition,
I walk in and I say, use Brad Mott. He's great. The casting director goes, we already, he's not available. All right. You've never heard a more bullshit answer in your life because Brad lives in Chicago. Nobody knows who Brad Mott is because he's not a working Hollywood actor. But I'm not about to say to a casting director, you're full of shit, right. Which should have been my response. Instead, I said, then I'm by far the second best choice as a joke.
Right.
I do the audition and I got the job and I was all wrong. I'm telling you, I wasn't right for the role.
Okay.
We go to work on Monday and back then, I'm telling this way too long, but it's a fun story. The table was enormously long. In the audience was 150 people because everybody wanted to be there for Seinfeld. They want to be around.
Right.
There was an omelet bar. There was food to be had by all the people. And I'm sitting over here and way down at the other end is Jerry. I'm supposed to be sitting next to him on an airplane. So they should have put me next to him so that we could have an intimate conversation. Instead, I'm screaming the lines down at the end for a role I already shouldn't be playing. And nothing was landing. After the reading, I went up to our director, who I knew, a guy named Tom Chironis, and I said, "I, you got to fire me. I'm not right for this." He goes, no, you're great. I go, Tom, I'm not right. I know I'm going to get paid. Fire me. No, you're right. I tell Larry that afternoon, who was somebody I didn't know well, you got to fire me. No, you're great. We do Tuesday's rehearsal. We do it all. That afternoon, we have the run-through. I said to Larry to fire me. Tom called me that night, and he fired me, rightly. Larry said, we're going to change it to be a drunk. It's going to be out. And so I said, I didn't audition for that. I'm not right for it. I'll tell you who replaced me. Do you know who Joe Maher is, Maher?
No.
One of the great character actors of all time. Of all time. Did you ever see Heaven Can Wait with Warren Beatty?
Yeah, of course.
He was the butler, the gray-haired English butler.
Okay, yes.
That's who replaced me. Okay. The opposite of me.
Right.
So I got fired from Seinfeld, but I asked to be fired, and I never got hired again. But then I was lucky I got on that. What was the question? Brian, why do you make me tell these long stories
I love it. I mean, all I know is this, is that you're way, way spicier than parsley. I know for sure. Not as bland as parsley and pointless.
You are correct. I can add to it. However, let's face it. We're going to the movie. We're going to watch the TV show because of the meat and potatoes. Don't worry. I'll make everything look nice. Potatoes are white. Meat is brown. I'll give you a little green. I'll give you some color. But you're not there to eat me. You're there to eat the meat and potatoes.
All right. Fair enough. Can we talk about how incredible our skin is? It protects us from the outside world while also being a litmus test for how our body is doing physically and emotionally. Our skin sends us important messages about our lifestyle, nutrition, and about how we feel. It plays such an important role in how we see ourselves and how the world sees us. So let's shine a spotlight on our skin. Let's go deep into skin health, what it means, what it looks like, and how to have it. Join host Nicole Berry as she unravels the mysteries around our skin on the new series, Skin Queries, a podcast brought to you by Ruby Studio from iHeartMedia. With the help from people with real-life stories and experts of all sorts, she gets to the heart of what makes us glow from the inside out. Listen to Skin Queries on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland. A man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to tell you something else.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to jump years ahead.
Yes.
Because what I'm doing now.
Okay.
Do you watch East New York or are you aware of East New York?
Yes, of course. I was going to talk to you about East New York.
Well, I'm going to mention
the top premiere of last year. You're on a hit, baby.
I am at this age with this face and my resume that I am playing a cop. Fantastic. There's nothing. How grateful. Oh, my God. And you know, you're jealous. You want me dead. I know. Yeah, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. That show is a police drama.
Okay.
That show is all about detectives trying to solve a crime.
Yes.
What the hell am I doing there? I give it flavor. That's what I do. I question still, can I be a New York cop? Really? At my age, with this body, can I? And I walk and I see some 260-pound cop standing on the corner, New York cop. I go, yeah, I'm a New York cop. Yeah. I'm not a TV cop.
Right.
I'm a New York cop. You want realism? You want a little bit of flavor? You want what New York can offer? That's what I'm there for.
Right.
But I ain't going to solve the crimes. I'll help. Other people will run into the burning building with a gun. Bam, bam, bam. I ain't doing that. But I lend it great flavor and humanity. And that's what I love. I love
it. That's what I always want to do as well, for sure.
Yeah. It's what I do.
One time I wanted you dead.
Go ahead.
One time I wanted you dead. I have not been lucky enough to work with who I consider to be up there as the greatest creative filmmakers in the United States, the Coen brothers, serious man. Uncle
Arthur. Did you audition for the role?
Now, I think I was a little young, or at least that's how I justified it to myself. Yeah, that was one time. You mentioned that at the beginning, like that you want these people dead. Just briefly, just for a moment.
Oh,
I wouldn't say
of
dead.
Course.
More just like the, what is it, the Galooly kneecapping incident?
Exactly.
Yes.
That's
just
another
that.
Way of saying, yes, I like their kneecaps. Look, I had that back when I was understudy to Pelinor in seventh grade in Camelot. I wanted the guy dead. I was literally in my head thinking before Galuli was ever there and the woman had her knees knocked out.
Nancy
I thought
Kerrigan.
About it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nancy, I wanted, yes, that's what I'm talking about. Of course I don't want them dead. And I love those people.
Yes.
I love them. But for a little while, well, let them not exist.
Talk to me. I'm a huge fan of that movie as well. Your performance, stellar, a serious man. How was it like working with the Coen brothers?
Can I say something else? Yeah. I wonder, and I know what your last name is, and I don't even know your religion or your background, but more often than not, I would think that you would play the Irish kindly uncle. Like, you should do Our Wilderness.
Okay.
Have you ever done Our Wilderness?
I have not. I have
do
not.
You know the play?
I do know the play, yes. I
oh,
know
my
the
God.
Play.
How wonderful. You're larger than life. You're who we want to be with. And that is your essence. Now, my essence is usually happy and everything, and I was sort of lovable, but this was a darkly troubled guy, which is a fun thing to play, and of course you could play it. But initially, somebody who was up for the role, and we've talked about it, was Patton Oswalt.
Mm.
And could he have done it? I just think it would be very different. I think that what I bring is a little bit of the same lovable characteristics that you would, but deeply sad. Hmm. This lonely guy who goes to what was the bar that he went to for the young boys. But could that guy be capable of it? Of course. And that's what's so great about all of these horrible serial killer dramas.
Yes.
That they look like the scout leader next door.
Yeah.
And anyway, let's talk about the Coen brothers. I have so many things about the Coen brothers to say. Number one, they are as brilliant as you think, and it is not haphazard. I once said that I think that, like Hitchcock, the movie, they know what the movie looks like before they ever step on set.
Yes.
So that's one thing. They do let the actors go. When I auditioned for it, I'll tell you where I was. I was doing Damn Yankees in El Paso.
That's different.
I was doing Damn Yankees in El Paso, Texas, at a theater. And
you don't say no. Now you don't say no to anything.
To nothing. I always wanted to play Applegate. It was a 2 or 3 week run. Go and rehearse for a week and a half, 2 weeks. Go do the play. I wanted to do it.
Right.
So I'm doing Damn Yankees in El Paso, and they want me to audition for the thing. Well, I can't come in because I'm in El Paso, so they have me tape it. And the direction from Joel was, you can't be too big. When you cry, you're crying. It's huge. And he told me the story of Bill Macy doing Fargo. And there's that scene where we all know where he's so frustrated and things aren't going his way. He just bangs on the roof of the car. Bang, 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 bang. I got like that. And Bill Macy said, they're going to laugh at me in New York, and they're going to laugh at me in Chicago making a choice like that, acting like that. Joel said, no, 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 do it. It's what everybody remembers. He was huge. Who bangs on a car like that? But he did, out of frustration. So they said, you can't be too big. So I had to do that tough, tough crying scene by the pool. Mm-hmm. And I was not too big. And so I then come in. I'm going to go back in time. I get called in to meet them to read for two movies. One is Burn After Reading.
Okay.
A lawyer has two speeches, and they're huge. I worked and worked and worked on that. The other was the lawyer in Serious Man. I hardly worked on it. And it's nothing. I didn't care about it. I wanted to be in the movie with George and Brad Pitt and Fran and do that. I didn't get the lawyer role. I mean, this lawyer in Burn After Reading with the monologues, I didn't get it. Killed me. They don't want me for the lawyer in Serious Man. So I read for the rabbi. They say, we want you to look at the character of the lead, the Michael Stuhlbarg part. I said, you know what? You're the Coen brothers. Why would I want to do a cold reading? Let me go home and study it, and then I'll come back for you. You're not doing this for a long while, right? Yeah, sure. They never called me back. So I gave up the lead by not auditioning, by not doing cold reading.
Right.
However, then it was summertime, and they asked me to do I think they had finished doing Burn After Reading. And George, who was on the set at the time and who was my good friend, said, no, the boys really want to, he always put it like this, the boys really like you, the boys want to use you, the boys really like you. That's when, during the summer, I put myself on tape for Cousin Arthur,
yeah.
or Uncle Arthur. And that's when I did the thing. But I had auditioned, you know, from December through till June.
Right.
So.
Well, congratulations on that. I do want to bring up, you brought up George a couple of times. You know, you talked about meeting people and a variety of people on projects and how much you love that. You guys ended up becoming roommates.
Yeah.
And
well, yes, we were roommates. We were roommates because it was an Oscar and Felix thing. He had split with his wife, and so he stayed with me for a while before he got his other place. And then I used to stay at his house. So was I a roommate? No, I was a guest at his house.
Right.
But I would never call us roommates.
You would not.
Per se. Okay. No, but we did stay together because of circumstances.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you and he, do you all talk about work and what interests you and potentially people or projects that he has steered you or you have steered him into?
Never once have I steered him into anything.
Okay.
Or given advice. I used to be astounded at some things. There was a role. I mean, he's so smart. There was a role. He wasn't a big, he wasn't a star then, but he was getting offers and big things. He was offered a role on a script that he really liked. He would talk about it. I really love this script. And you'd be surprised by it. And then they rewrote it. And he looks at it. And he goes, they rewrote it. It's terrible. He called the producers. He called the director. He said, it's not good. We got to go back to the other one. They go, well, we're not going to. He ended up not doing the movie. It was a big budget movie. And it did not do well, number one. Another big star got the role. He walked away, and it was probably $1 million, maybe more. It was a big movie.
Right.
It bombed. That still stays with me, that he is so astute. And he always says, you know, these movies that they haven't finished the script, but there's already a coming attraction in the theater. No. You go into a movie when the script is finished. You know how it ends. Now, you can't tell that to Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, because they kept rewriting Casablanca, but I understand that. On the flip side, for myself, he is always so intuitive and has great opinions and can give great advice. And there are times when I don't take it, and he gets furious with me. He's truly angry. I'm telling you, he's angry at me. Then I go, well, I did it. But we don't talk about work that much at all.
Yeah.
No, hardly talk about work at all. Plus, he's in a, especially now, he's in a sphere of things that, you know, it would be like asking some little soldier who's out in the field what we should do in the Ukraine. It's just heads and tails above my sphere.
Well, I think it's fascinating that you both are such good friends. The idea that you know, what you just said, that he had the ability to turn down something that was $1 million or whatever. And again, you say yes to everything. And what's fascinating to me about that is not, I mean, you know, of course people have different choices or whatever, but that for you, it feels to me like that you say yes to life, basically.
And absolutely. I'm going to tell you something that's really interesting. This is really, really interesting. And it happened last night.
Okay.
I didn't get to see the Barbara Walters special that they did where they celebrated her life.
Yes.
And she asks the celebrity, a lot of them, What is your philosophy of life, or what is something like that? In my head, I'm thinking, what if I was interviewed by, what is my philosophy? I want what we were talking about. I want new experiences of everything. Travel, food, my glib thing about a date. If you are at a restaurant, your favorite meal is on the menu, or the house specialty is on the menu, what do you order?
I will 100% ask about the house specialty. And if I believe from the person who is serving me that it's really something, I will order that for sure.
I am close to you. There's not a prayer I'm not ordering the house specialty. I don't care if they say it's the chef's throw up. I'm ordering the house specialty. That's what I do. Yeah. I'll never have that again. Where will I be? You say it's the specialty? Okay, unless it's like the fish of the day because, oh, we ordered too much. That, but right. if I'm told that this Polish restaurant has duck and it's the best thing ever, and I go, I'm not really much for duck, I'll order the duck.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there.
That's how I live my life. I want the new experience. That's what I want. Out of 2 hours of Barbara Walters, they haven't shown George. He's the one who, that's what he answers. 45 seconds from when I answer in my head, George goes, I'm afraid I'm going to miss out on something. Mm. I'm afraid I'm going to miss out on this experience, that I'll die without having done that. The same answer.
Yeah.
Same answer, little different words. I think I just want to experience everything. But you're right. That's what life is. I tell my kids that. And when they don't listen, I want to grab them by the lapels.
Right.
And say, no, do this. I invited my children to the Kennedy Center Honors. I can't force them to go. And I wasn't going to. It's the fucking Kennedy Center Honors. Chances are, if you don't go with me, you're never going to the Kennedy Center Honors.
Right.
You're not going to meet Gladys Knight. You're not going to meet the President of the United States. There's a chance, a real good chance, you're going to meet all of them if you go with me. They said no. I'm okay with that. A little bit I understand. They don't want to be in that. They're young doing that. But that's what I want.
Right.
That's my philosophy. And I do embrace life. I want it all.
Yeah.
And I am a FOMO, was fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out, yeah.
Oh, it takes me forever to, you know, to get to a party, but to leave, I'll close the place up.
You and I are alike in that way. And I will tell you this. One, I've always respected your work. I respect you even more now. And two, out of this conversation, I will never, ever forget the dream that you told me, because it's so aspirational, which would be, if they had the money, to do a guest star part every single week, to be your own repertory company. I think that is so fucking cool. I think that is so
Well, I have a question, because I so love your work. How often do you get to do plays?
Not so much anymore. But you know what's so funny about that? And who knows, maybe this conversation will make me do. I have been talking about it.
Uh-huh.
Like a lot the last 6 months.
Right. A lot. And I'm not talking about a long run.
No, I know.
I'm talking about going to Seattle and doing it for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Or finding out a Gunkwit is doing one play out in a Gunkwit, Maine. Because the thing about TV, which it gets scary, is that you walk on set and your goal is to get through the day. Do I know all my lines? Not even do I know my character. Can I get all the words out? That's no way to act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way to act is go and really parse a play, get it deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Richard, thank you so much for coming on here. You have, one, made me laugh, and two, inspired me. So thank you.
Well, thank you. What I really hope is that I talk like this, that I'm not pompous. I can't stand it. If I listen back and I go, why do you even talk like that?
No. Why would you say it's that? Awesome. It's awesome.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Richard, thank you so much for stopping by for a little chat. I'm going to see you on a golf course very, very soon. Look, I think it's safe to say, not just me, but all of us are mad about you. Yeah, that wasn't good either. To all of you out there listening, thank you for tuning in. Next week, we have got a pretty, pretty exciting guest coming your way who I will give you absolutely no hints about because, well, I value the power of surprise. We'll see you then. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our senior producer is Diego Tapia. Our producers are Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Sammy Katz. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by the one and only Creed Bratton.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day, and regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series. A smart TV built by the streaming pros.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Mosley, and I want to let you know about my new immersive BBC Radio 4 podcast series, Deep Calm. It's all about how to tap into and activate a remarkable system that we all have hardwired inside of us, our relaxation response. And it's been developed to be listened to at any time you want to really unwind. I hope you'll listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.